Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
But you also had people that were very fine people.
Very fine people.
On both sides.
And the aliens would mind meld and give them the technology. They're bad aliens.
So
are you surprised the Nazis were influenced by demons?
No, if demons are real, I would definitely think they'd be on the side of the Nazis.
Yeah.
McDonald's is connected to the Clintons. They chop up the bodies and put them into the sausage and hamburgers. People are being cannibalized. Look it up.
And I'm watching CNN talk about this as violent white nationalist protests. We have done everything in our power to keep this peaceful, you know?
It's Pepe's become kind of a symbol.
Welcome to Yeah Nah Passeran, a show about fascism and its gravediggers. I'm Cam Smith.
I'm Andy Fleming.
And this week we are joined by Dr. Catherine Tibaldi, who is the author of the new book, Alt Education, Gender, Knowledge, and Far-Right Metapolitics. Kat, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm such a fan of the podcast.
That's your third time on the show, but it's been a couple of years since we last spoke to you. My main memory from our previous conversations, Kat, is that you spent an awful lot of time reading and watching and listening to simply the worst content ever devised. What's been grabbing your attention lately?
So I spent a couple of years looking at the ways the far right teaches, what they say about schools, what they want schools to be like, you know, what they think it's important to learn and know. And it is really some of the worst stuff possible. It's phrenology, race science, this idea of being able to read a person's masculine archetype based on 7 awkward Twitter posts, a lot of homeschooling curricula, videos about ancient aliens, just like trying to assemble all the different kinds of alternative curriculums of wrong and racist ideas on the internet. And in the end, I actually came out of it very hopeful. This idea that they're just working so hard to teach all of these crazy ideas that they must actually not be innate, inherent, or part of most people's human experiences.
There's this idea that, you know, where the people we're talking about are idiots, that they're uneducated. But what you find when you look at them is that there's actually quite a lot of education going on. Could you talk a little bit about that idea and why it's dangerous to dismiss the right?
When I started researching for my PhD, it was maybe 2015, 2016. And this idea of the right was still this idea that they're this lost, left behind, rural, uneducated, quite stupid group of people with very little power, influence on the mainstream. And I think most people 10 years later would understand the power of the right. But I think that there's still often this sort of liberal assumption that the liberal kind of reactionary center is the one with the knowledge, with the kind of cultural interests, and the right are all quite still somehow quite stupid, quite uneducated, buffoonish. And they often play into this. Trump does sometimes look quite ridiculous. But in fact, what they're doing is they're constantly engaged in processes of education and of talking about education, trying to take over education. And this really reaches across the right from somebody like Pete Hegseth, who's been long involved in homeschooling, to groups like the alt-right, were engaged in these digital political education courses called Alt-Right 101, where they tried to teach the major themes and histories of their movement, and which are gross and upsetting.
Kat, the notion of alternative education in this context, what does it mean in terms of what are the things that are identified as belonging to mainstream education or popular education, state education, that the right is so concerned to reject?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So you know, on the one hand, alt education is the idea of playing with the term alt-right, which was then current. And it's also this idea of proposing themselves as an alternative to mainstream education. So an alternative to taxpayer-funded, both state and locally controlled public schools, this idea of being opposed to liberal education. And oftentimes we do tend to focus on the right as just being opposed to schools. We have this idea of, so the Christian right being opposed to the teaching of evolution and positioning liberal education in opposition to the right. But what we see on the right is, in fact, a lot, real interest in building alternative schools, so religious schools, a really strong interest in homeschooling, both as an educational model and as a way of keeping women in the home. And especially now a growing interest in popular and online education. Hundreds of hours of curricula from pseudo-academics, folks like Jordan Peterson, many right-wing guys with their two-hour kind of video lectures on any kind of topic from pseudo-archaeology to, I don't know, populist rhetoric around the immigration. And what they all share is that a certain shared belief in the values of hierarchy, the values of capitalism, the value of misogyny, and the value of racism. And it was just interesting to see sort of how comprehensive this was, that there was really so many different ways of doing this right-wing education, from, say, a charter school, a religious school, a homeschool, to just a weird YouTube channel, to these online universities like the University of Austin, or the German language version of Gegen Uni, which was run by the far right, I think Martin Selner and his group. They would hire like reactionary professors and try to come up with a whole reactionary curriculum. And you could sign up online to learn the history of the, I don't know, Great Teutonic Knights and how wonderful the Germans are and the true histories of World War II, how aliens built the pyramids because they were white, and just a whole host of stuff that is presented as knowledge. We wouldn't necessarily consider it to be, it's certainly not true. It's certainly not morally good, but it is taught and presented as though it were a kind of facts. And also it works to spread this ideology, and it works to legitimate it and normalize it as a kind of knowledge.
At one of the educational institutions that you examine in the book is a group called Praga U. Could you tell us a little bit about, I guess, who Dennis Praga is and the sort of things that one might learn at Praga University?
Oh, Praga U, it's just, Dennis Praga is the most like avuncular, that the kind of imaginary right-wing uncle that we all have when we go home and we have to convince him that no, like ICE is bad and women are people. And Praga U really has just, you know, this guy, he has these like fireside chats where he sits and he basically shares FDR's racial politics, but none of the other social politics. And he sits down and he tells you about kids these days really need to have more male authority. And kids these days really need to learn the value of capitalism and a dollar, this kind of rhetoric, or his take on current events. We really need to support ICE. And of course, the protesters are terrorists and this just horrible stuff. And then they do a lot of videos. They used to be aimed at a little bit older kind of audience, maybe parents, certainly teens. And they had this kind of, I want to say sassy, but that's not the right word exactly, because it's masculine coded. And I feel like sassy sounds like it's a bit tacitly feminine. But the grown-ups say that the United States was founded by slave owners. But what they don't want you to know is that actually it was by strong white boys just like you. And then a lot of like cartoons. The one that marked me the most was one called Why God is a He. I found that funny because, of course, right-wingers hate pronouns. But also this belief that in the sort of angelic importance of male authority. The argument was just men like male authority, so God must be a man so that people will obey him better. It's a absolutely nonsense argument presented in this kind of pseudo-philosophical language, and then also with these weird infographics. This, it's as though the symbol on the bathroom door got angry and started yelling misogyny at you. It's very weird.
And this group, for all of the ridiculousness of these arguments, they've started to find themselves introduced into actual school curriculums in the United States.
Yeah, they've done really well at presenting right-wing propaganda as knowledge. And they even actually, they'll point out, and they'll say, our history is true because it makes America great. The propagandistic effect of it is seen as sort of part of its truth value, right? And it's our truth is what makes America strong, and your truth makes America weak. And so certain Republican-led education departments, most notably in Oklahoma, have picked this up. But they exaggerate a little bit their influence. They keep saying they've captured Texas, but it seems not. But I believe it's five states have Prager as part of the optional curriculum, including New Hampshire, not so far from where my parents live, as part of a personal finance lessons. And so one of the ways in which they get a foothold into schools is by saying, by building on these sort of common sense arguments of kids need to learn a little bit more practical stuff. How do we pay taxes? How do we do finance? And they sell this is not ideological, but then you actually open up the lessons on things like Cash Course, which is meant to be teaching kids about how to manage their personal finances. And it's just capitalism is great. Taxes are bad. Why should we have to give taxes to the government? And then a little bit of other information, but it's mainly just like it doesn't really tell you how to do your taxes. It rather tells you that they shouldn't exist.
Stuff like how to buy Bitcoin.
Oh yeah, they do have some. They do have some videos on Bitcoin, of course. That's a whole world to get into, is the Bitcoin guy and his logics, and of course also a lot of stuff around the trans panic. So schools are going to let your kids transition. In fact, they will forcibly transition your kids. Prager also, despite the fact that I believe Dennis Prager is Jewish, they're also deeply connected to Christian nationalists. So they're part of the Turning Point USA extended universe. And they often have a lot of Christian nationalist propaganda. So their prototypical show now is one where they take, say, 6 to 10-year-old kids, and they have them do a contest, and they ask them questions about American history. The questions are things like, true or false, America was founded as a Christian nation. The kid will say true. They will be rewarded with $10. And then whoever has the most money wins and is asked what they will do with the money. Will they invest it? Will they start a business? The kid who has the right answer is rewarded. And all of this is filmed and takes place in front of the Reagan Library. So you can start to see this kind of connections between like reactionary ideologies, capitalism, and Christianity.
Say what you will about them, but they know entertainment.
Kat, you have the friendly Uncle Dennis educating young white boys on how to conduct themselves. But I guess I'm wondering, in terms of the framing of gender and sexuality, there are women educators teaching young girls. What can you say about the different roles that are allowed or afforded educators in this realm, and to whom do they appeal? Are the markets for this sort of material, is there a curriculum for boys and for girls? What did you find when you looked at the kinds of materials that are being produced in terms of their gendered content? Who's producing it and who's consuming it?
Oh, great question. Prager has curricula for boys and curricula for girls. The curricula for boys often centers on the boy as sort of the great world historical figure. One video I remember was the boy puts in like pizza rolls in the oven, and then he's transported back into time to become a hero of the revolution. So this idea, like, little boy is always presented as an adventure. And this is cross-cutting, not just in PragerU, but in stuff like the Christian nationalist curriculums I looked at, or the alt-right and tradwife curriculums that I looked at. The boy was always presented as this little adventurer, often outside, often getting to do stuff, and often as this like hero in the center of the story. And the little girl is rather instead presented as like the mom. She has to be soft. She has to be caring. She has to be what one group of Christian nationalists called a winsome ambassador for Christ. So if the boy is like the heroic, joyful warrior, to borrow their paraphrasing of, I think it's T.S. Eliot or Tolkien or one of these fantasy guys, the girl is instead just the soft carer who takes care of him. That said, the moms I talked to, right, I didn't agree in any way with their politics. I found their gender, it was very difficult to talk with them about the way they view gender. And this, often they would talk about being a woman as like your heritage and your inheritance, and it was your duty to your bloodline. It was often very difficult. I do want to say that they weren't stupid. Many of them had very advanced degrees. They knew Latin or physics. They were really well read. And sometimes they would enjoy like testing me. Have you read this? Have you read this? And I'd be like, no, I have read absolutely none of these books. I am like probably a quarter as smart as you are. They really weren't stupid. They really were devoted. And in many ways, they were really good educators. I'm sure that in some ways, they really worked hard to give their kids the best possible education according to their views and values, which, of course, for me would not be the best possible education. You'd have to be anti-fascist and much cooler than them. But I don't want to just say, oh, these people are terrible, the same way that PragerU was terrible, right? These were moms who loved their kids, and they loved in problematic, difficult ways. But I think I wonder how many of them would instead be able to be part of something like an anti-fascist educators group, a communist educators group, if we had these kinds of resources as available as the right has, if we had the curriculum available, if we had these mothers groups, if we had a lot more like left-wing parenting resources. This is something I find myself wanting now, and I think it would be something really cool that we could bring.
Kat, you started researching the book during Trump's first term, and you've written it just as the second term was about to begin. I guess one thing that's notable about Trump's second go is that seems that they had a plan in place in the form of Project 2025 to start dismantling institutions. Could you speak a little bit about what was Trump's policy on education during his first term and how it evolved in the second?
Yeah, great question. If I remember right, Trump's original education platform was pretty simple. It was just teach American exceptionalism and let's have more capitalism in schools. And he wasn't, but then when he took up Project 2025, education became a much bigger part of this. I think also as a way to make inroads within the Christian nationalist community to make a connection to the Russell Vought and this kind of anti-institutional and anti-deep state government institutional and that would like to have maybe a more Christian government and a more Christian education. And of course, one of the big ones was dismantling the Federal Department of Education. And I don't think that folks really understood the importance of this. When I would talk to people, they'd say, oh, the states do education anyway, who cares? But of course, having a federal governmental organization that oversees whether we have equal access to schools, depending on our gender, race, and ability, is relatively important. And I think we're, as is having something to check and make sure that we're learning shit instead of just PragerU propaganda in the classroom. And just this attack on teachers that came in the second Trump campaign really shocked me, that they were all of a sudden our schools were full of pink-haired communists. I think building not just on Project 2025, but also just this online anti-gender discourse that was really happening around our schools, with stuff like libs of TikTok targeting teachers, these sort of trans panics, and you know, oh, the schools are going to disrupt the normal order of the family, gender, and sexuality. They let women go out to work. They teach kids different values. And then this is coded as, we're going to make the kids gay, we're going to make the kids trans, all of which I think would be lovely if schools wanted to do that. So the education policy is really a good lens to look at the way Trump takes the online right, Christian right institutions, and brings these together in a really terrifying coalition.
Kat, another educational institution you examine, perhaps slightly less polished than PragerU, I suspect, is a Patriotic Alternative and their homeschooling program. Could you tell us a bit about what you found when you looked into Mark Collette and his band of teachers?
Oh, they're so bad. It was interesting to see the way they forged these connections with the U.S. alt-right. You know, Collette was part of Alt-Right 101, and I wondered if this little trad wife, Brie Fauché, had a little bit of a crush on him, but it didn't work out for her, and she vanished from the scene. And then there was also this borrowing of U.S. anti-trans panics and the anti-gender, like the panic around a drag queen story hour in the public library. These attacks on schools and libraries, I think, borrowed straight from the U.S., and it was interesting to trace these kind of reciprocal links. And also just to see that they really did a very poor job of it. If you want to educate your kid in a homeschool in a right wing, in the U.S., you could find very many Christian nationalist curricula masquerading as like great ways to learn Latin or deep, rich humanities curricula. If you look at Patriotic Alternative, it's very embarrassing. There's two brochures that are like, England, it's very diverse. There is Scotland and also England and maybe Wales. If we think there's dragons that live there, we are not sure. And then that's their geography lesson. There's a list of 5 books. They're mostly by Enid Blyton. It's basically just a list of like 25 racist English things. They have not yet really developed. And I think that's good. That's good. It's nice to know that at least there's some right-wing groups are not doing so well. And I believe the homeschooling curriculum was started by this woman, Jody Kay, who's a bit of a weird hippie who also does sound baths and like live streams with a group called the White Arts Collective, where she sings songs about how she loves England, her blood and soil. And so I'm imagining her now as like an evil kindergarten teacher, like strumming along with the 5 racist kids of Patriotic Alternative there with her. So they are grim and very sad, but they seem to be quite ineffective, which makes me happy.
Yes, it's perhaps effective at colouring my nightmares tonight.
The concept of an alternative, there's a certain kind of, I guess it, maybe it's because I'm thinking also of the alternative right, but the extent to which these kinds of ideas are sold to others as being in some way subversive, or they have a certain cachet. And I'm wondering how that's exploited, not only in terms of what might be an alternative school curriculum, but more broadly in terms of the meta-political project you've identified these figures as being engaged in, and the ways in which these kinds of ideas, which might otherwise be termed simply racist or reactionary, are instead sold as being emerging from an intellectual dark web or reflective of some kind of political heterodoxy. What's the function of that kind of sales pitch, and why does this attract people, and why do people clothe themselves in this kind of seemingly somewhat dissident labeling that could also be said to be appropriated from elements of the left?
This is actually my current project. I'm working on a special issue called Framing the Counter-Revolution as the Counterculture with the absolutely brilliant Katie Hyatt and a wonderful collection of scholars. And it's so interesting the way they, I think schools really are an important way to look at how this works. This idea of framing yourself in opposition to school, which is understood as boring and mainstream and kind of censorious. This idea of the social justice warrior is also like someone who can't take a joke, who's not very fun. And then you frame yourself as an alternative to this. And it allows stuff that would just otherwise be considered simply wrong to be framed as countercultural, transgressive. It focuses on this, the anti-institutional aspect of it rather than the fact that it's true or anti-good. It allows it to avoid the, to shift the moral dimension and kind of shift the epistemic dimensions to start talking about how it challenges consensus or challenges mainstream narratives. I remember the first time I heard language from the classes I used to teach in critical media literacy, I would hear them in the discourses of right-wingers and anti-vaxxers. It'd be like, oh yeah, we just need to challenge the dominant narratives that we're done. When did this moment of co-option happen? I mean, I think it's important to always remember that they aren't cool. They work very hard. They work very hard. They learn a lot. And they, in the end, it is really stupid stuff that they learn. I noticed that Turning Point USA just came out with an ad that said, please attend our alternative football halftime show. And it had a Paul McCartney and Bob Dylan as the two imagined headliners. And this is interesting because these are, on the one hand, these are two figures so strongly associated with 60s counterculture and with kind of a liberal or leftist sort of politics. I don't actually know their politics, but they tend to index kind of a leftist kind of dude. And they were imagined to be performing along with Mrs. Charlie Kirk. So clearly taken up in this very right wing and presented as an alternative to the mainstream Super Bowl party, which is featuring, oh God, what's his name? Bad Bunny? And who is anti-ICE and who embodies many of these things that we would consider to be actually leftist positions. And so there's something funny about literally co-opting and taking these images of old counterculture, but which are actually much more mainstream and which are associated to a whiter, older, more affluent audience in this current moment, right? So there's something to be thought around. Maybe the 60s counterculture is no longer the counterculture that we need to center on. Maybe hippies weren't that cool, actually. And maybe we need to look towards new forms of cultural production, new forms of education that are more loudly anti-fascist.
Well, folks, on the note that we have to do away with hippiedom, we shall leave it there. Kat, thanks for joining us. If people want to find you online, you are on Blue Sky at kat-tibaldi.bsky.social. And the book is Alt Education, Gender, Knowledge and Far-Right Metapolitics. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Andy, that is our program. We'll be back next week.
Yes, we'll see you then. Thanks for listening.
Are you a current 3CR subscriber? Your membership helps us stay true to our community values.
It enables us to produce over 100 local shows each week, train and support new volunteers and broadcasters, and maintain our transmission technology.
Your subscription helps us cover issues important to you, like public housing, First Nations justice, community languages,
advocacy for Palestine, celebrating queer and trans communities, and bringing you the best of local independent music.
As we head into our 50th year of broadcasting, your ongoing subscription is as vital to the station today as it was for those subscribing in 1976.
Help to keep 3CR unique by becoming a subscriber today.
Go to 3cr.org.au or call 03 9419 8377.
Kefirs are Palestinian scarves, and they're a symbol of support for justice for the Palestinian people. From the traditional black and white kefir to an array of modern designs, explore the range and order online, or drop by 3CR during business hours. We're your support for the rights of Palestinians. Go to kufiyas.org.au. That's kufiyas.org.au. A 3CR supporter.
Disasters like flood, fire, and extreme heat can have a significant impact on people's lives. Community legal centres help people experiencing challenges posed by climate change and disasters to access the resources and support they need. Disasters can lead to a range of problems, such as damage to your home, poor conditions with your rental home, difficulty getting insurance, issues within families, at work, and with Centrelink payments. Community legal centres can be found across Victoria and can provide help if you've been affected by a disaster. To find a community legal centre near you, visit the Federation of Community Legal Centres website at fclc.org.au. You can also contact Disaster Legal Help Victoria on 1800 113 432 and go to its website for helpful information at disasterlegalhelp.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.